We have a tangent on Minbari bone sex that
Yeah,
happened.
the big quote was, "Your bonehead is a wonderland."
Yeah, said by Jeff May. Jeff May thought of that out of
He
nowhere.
thought of that all himself. That's why we have professionals on.
There's a hole in your mind.
Those weak will survive.
Just another cash grab.
I will kill Mike Slater.
Ladies' night out to Zaha Doom, girls.
It's part of the code. The boneheads don't kill the other boneheads.
Mr. Garibaldi.
Just my little thingies. Get them all in there, you know. Nothing weird.
Mummy is not a perfect film.
More dino glasses for the Narn.
Miss Piggy makes it on the deck.
Why is Mike on a singabout?
I was born in Philadelphia.
The devil's mullet.
And the year of joy.
The year is 2026.
The name of the show, you gotta check this out.
Welcome, everybody. We are at the end of sorts. We are at the end of our Babylon 5 before we go off on our glorious crusade, Mike. I hope not. Anyway, you are at You Gotta Check This Out with Mike Andre. I am Mike, and with me is... Oh, wait.
I'm
messed
the
it
Dre.
Up.
You're this time I'm the Dre. That's so exciting. I've never been a Dre before.
Yeah, go to MikeSlater.com for all of Dre's thoughts. And we have reached the end of Babylon 5, the start of this podcast, things we thought you had to check out. We thought you needed to check out Babylon 5, even after season 5, a premise that I stand behind. And for the last episode, we had to get a special guest. The first time in a while, Mike, where I feel it is not torture to one of your friends. Who do we got?
We got our old friend back, Carl Wolf. Carl, you've been on the show a couple times before, and the last episode, we covered Sleeping in Light with people who hadn't seen the show before, and we wanted to get you on to actually give somebody who is in favor of Babylon 5 and has seen the whole thing a little bit of light to Sleeping in Light. So how you doing, Carl?
Hello, everyone. Hey, guys. I'm doing well, and yeah, I can't even imagine two people just watching the last episode. Why should I care about these people?
The only reason we did it, it came up very organically. We had Jeff May, who wanted to be on the show, but Jeff's only stipulation is that he would only watch the last episode, which in some series would work out, but in Babylon 5, there are many ways. They filmed it early. They did it as separate from everything. It seemed there was no way to get him into the show. He even brought one of his friends on, and both of them had to sit through the last episode of Babylon 5 with no background.
Now, for the record, Carl is a fantastic guest. Of course, check out War Without an End, one of my favorite sets of episodes. Might come up again, Mike, interestingly enough. And you literally stopped in the middle of a parade to join our Blitzcast. Might come up again. No spoilers. So a fantastic guest. And Carl, the two things I'm really going to want to have going on this episode, and we're breaking all sorts of formats because we hit the end, right? For listeners of the show, if this is your first episode, bizarre. Our normal format is ask the guest if they'd seen Babylon 5. Surprise quiz that Dre is always surprised by. I'm keeping that bit up going forward, Mike. I don't care.
You don't know there's a quiz, Dre.
Yeah. We got a much better name that we can say, too. A little bit of recap as need be, guest top level thoughts. Recap the episode. Ask the guest if they have anything to plug or check out. Ask them if they're going to see any more Babylon 5 go on their way, right? That was the normal format. We're past that. We've done that with you multiple times now. We've talked every single episode. So we're copying the end of Babylon 5, where the very last episode, the finale is really an epilogue for the fans to say, we ended this show on a cliffhanger. Ideally, if the extended universe takes off, you'll get it all resolved in a way you like. In case you don't, I want you to have one last moment with your friends where you get to remember them fondly and not as a war criminal who's possessed by an alien parasite, a dictator who doesn't quite know what he's doing and is still figuring out how to rule, Lanier, who was done so dirty. So, Mike, I will admit, like a ranger who has lost his way and is floating in the void, I too feel without, because this is our first show without it. So, Mike, before we get going, are you comfortable with letting Carl kind of riff, kind of jazz on Sleeping in the Light, almost a blind rejoinder to our last episode?
Oh, of course. That was most the reason we had Carl on here. We didn't want to end with people who didn't even know what the series was. We got to have Carl on, our resident expert.
Mike, just to throw this out there, it's almost like saying, instead of having a bunch of people we haven't known and ending on a weird downer, we're going to have people we know and end on an up note.
Huh. Hmm.
Interesting.
Speaking of sleeping in light.
Sleeping in light. Carl, I'm really excited to hear your thoughts on this and see where this combo goes.
Oh, sure. As I had mentioned, message to Mike earlier, I rewatched the last three episodes just to, for the podcast, just to make sure it was fresh in my mind. And thanks for making me cry today while at work. So Sleeping in Light was talked about for years. So JMS had been in communication with the fandom on the internet when it was still young. And one of the interesting things about the show was that he had written the end first, so that obviously there some of the finer details changed, but the ending at least was always there. So no matter how the show deviated, it would always get back to that central point, that linchpin. Yeah, Sleeping in Light is the kind of like the grand culmination of the show, and it's, I don't know, it's poetic. It's a work of art. The music is out of this world. When it played at my funeral, yeah, it, for me personally, it was the capstone to a whole chapter of my life, and I can't watch it without thinking of that era ending and the new one beginning. And what was awesome is that even though it was created on the fourth season budget, because fifth season was probably not going to happen until Turner came out of the blue, we won because Ivanova was back. Oh my God. She was always one of my favorite characters, and I was very sad that she left. And so when Sleeping in Light came on, and it was a huge, it actually was in the news. I went over to Ken Marable's house to watch it with them. And it was just waterworks, tears. Oh my God. It's amazing. It's amazing. So there's also a lot of references, not only to the show itself, but also to all the mythology that kind of inspired JMS and Babylon 5. So you have the Arthurian legend, you have Tolkien, it's dripping with Tolkien. So Aragorn and Arwen's parting, and the mention of the star and the sun and the moon, like the Silmaril and the two trees of Valinor. It's just so beautiful and poetic that way. And instead of dealing with all this kind of crazy high drama and political intrigue and war, it's just with our friends having a mostly normal dinner. And I thought the acting was spectacular as well. And again, the music is really, for me, the thing that stays with me all these years. It was teased at like little motifs throughout the series, and as Christopher Frank developed it, and it started to heavily play into fifth season because he had already written it for Sleeping in Light. So he was teasing us and edging it up until the final climax. It's several key moments.
After the fact, I don't really have many arguments against my criticisms of JMS in season 5 beyond what I have said many times, and Mike's heard, I think, 10 or 15 times now, right? Of like understanding what happened, right? Burnt out writer that really doesn't have a place to go and doesn't have a time to get set up. But holy cow, he actually has a budget to help out his friends. And like, how terrible it would be to his friends that have literally been on a shoestring budget for 4 years to say, oh, FYI, I actually have money to pay you and get you a good gig and a real place proper, to say I'm not going to do it. So I have complete understanding there. But what you just said, like where Christopher Frank had an end planning towards and kind of edged towards it as the season went, whereas that was a lot of our criticism about J. Michael Straczynski, and I think a very valid criticism brought up by our prior guests of getting into this last episode, it was very jarring with where everything else was going.
I think it was appropriate just because, again, it's this huge gap of time. It's 20 years. There's already been like two wars in between, the Telepath War and then the Drock War. And David was taken over and liberated and Londo died and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of tone difference from season 5 back to a tone that felt like from 4th season, I felt was welcome. I liked it quite a lot. It wasn't jarring for me at all. It felt more like coming back home. And yeah, because obviously JMS was like incredibly rushed, the scouring of the Shire. So the Shadow War should have ended at the end of season 4, and the scouring of the Shire, the war for Earth, should have ended in season 5. But all that got crushed into season 4, which on some levels is cool because it kept the pacing up like crazy. Season 4 is just nonstop, and that's a blessing and a curse. But yeah, and yeah, you're right, Dre. It's season 5, you got it! And like, shoot, I just told most of my stories. Quick, pull some strings together. Now, if Ivanova had stayed, she would have been in Lita's place. She would have been the one forming the telepath rebellion, which that might have been intriguing to see.
And that would have been perfect for season 5 for her. It continues her story. It pulls in everything from her past. And you can kind of see that he said that the whole Byron relationship was meant for Ivanova. JMS had said, and I've imagined that, yeah, that could have been a much more interesting series.
That would have played a lot better because the Byron Ivanova, it did almost feel predatory, honestly. You felt someone who'd been beaten down, who's being like incepted into a cult. Whereas I feel like if it had been Ivanova and Byron, it would have felt more even.
Yeah.
And you would have probably been on side. And also, then you could have used Ivanova to push a lot of this stuff. So it could, instead of you being like, what the fuck are you doing, Byron, demanding the planet out of the nowhere? If Ivanova is the one yelling at Sheridan about it or whatever.
Muscle behind it.
Yeah.
What JMS has always said is, I write outs for everybody and plan Bs for everybody in case an actor is lost or something like this happens. And so I think dragging Lita down through this abusive victim kind of situation, which she's been abused from day one. She was like manipulated by the Vorlons. She was cast out by her own people, treated like crap, then seduced by Byron, and she finds her own voice, but she gets dragged through all this dirt and then finally comes out the other end strong. Not just strong, but nuclear weapons strong. Jean Grey and the Dark Phoenix kind of saga. Was that ideal? It would have been better if we had Ivanova in that role, but I think JMS did what he could to salvage the situation, and while not elegant necessarily, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, that's probably his second biggest use of a trapdoor he had to do after Sinclair.
He basically lost his first choice for captain on both mega launches, if that makes sense, right? He lost O'Hare, he lost Claudia Christensen. I have a comparable on the finale of a famous moment. So spoilers for The Office, oh my God, everything's old because I'm like, spoilers for The Office, which is way newer than Babylon 5.
Spoilers
Pilot
for a long time ago.
There is a great moment in The Office, which is not the finale. The show keeps going, right? Which is when Michael and Jim say goodbye to each other and they basically just pretend stuff is normal. And I would say this episode was like exactly what you're saying, right? It was very chill. It was people meeting and all of them know in that moment, because right in the Jim Michael scene, which is great, it reminded me a lot of that, right? Where this entire episode, it's a bunch of people trying to play it cool while being sad. I did think there were a couple amazing moments, Mike having to ruminate. The scene where he's remembering I'm sorry, Mike, to say this. I hated the black and white flashback. I understand it was a choice that was made. It's just a decision I did not agree with. I appreciate it for consistency. They used it. If it's black and white, it's a flashback. I just did not like it. But the very last episode, he's seeing a flashback of himself yelling and the halls filled. And that is right when season 4 gets going. And then it flashes back to the room is empty. And I thought
that was exceedingly powerful. And you're exactly right. There's this exquisite tension throughout the episode. There's this horrible, sad thing and nobody's going to talk about it. And it's just building and building. It's like that moment when Sheridan and Delenn are in the hallway before he leaves and they finally break. Holy shit. That is
that's rough. I don't think I loved the last episode. I love someone who's never seen it. I thought we had a lot of fun. It is fun to criticize things, right? It's the Ratatouille thing.
The Ratatouille thing being a movie about criticism. I was wondering if you had any more thoughts on the last episode and breaking out about the whole last season, Carl, because pretty much everybody who had come on was really down on the last season, especially us with having gone through it straight for 4 seasons, finishing the series proper almost, and then going into what felt like an afterthought.
But we did have the Johnston brothers on at the end, just 2 of them. There is another, right? Yes. And towards the end, they actually were like, there was this sweet spot at the end of season 5 before I would argue it ended too abruptly because Crusade, unfortunately, did not pick it up adequately. And Sleeping the Light didn't really resolve it. the sweet spot of what this universe could be. And they both were like, this is intriguing. And I actually do want to see how we got there. So I think that a lot of people were rightfully kind of down on Babylon 5. The people had seen previous episodes. I don't get it. What's going on? Myself being like, man, you're killing something I love. With understanding, I gave JMS. But I would say we hit a sweet spot at the end there, Mike, where some of the guests, the Johnson brothers in particular, were like, I see what they're doing and I can dig this.
I also think that Babylon 5 season 5 hit a sweet spot in those last few episodes before the final three. And I think that also helped out because we had a lot of science fiction background to talk about with both Bill and Pete. And Pete especially, he came out of it, I'm surprised this is it. It seems like there should be a lot more. I may go back and watch more from the beginning.
So Sleeping Light, fifth season is complicated for the reasons we've mentioned. Also, they had a instructions or imperative from Turner to this is you basically have to start the series over again because now you have access to a whole audience who hasn't seen anything. Mm-hmm. They redid The Gathering, which I think is a vast improvement from the original. They made the made for TV movies, but they had to like almost do season one all over again.
Yeah. How do you pull in people to a season or to a show that is made to be told as one big long story?
Yeah, so he had to do all these introductions and a lot of exposition. So that kind of made fifth season a little weird. I took it for what it was when I was watching it. This is bonus. I figured the show, when we got word that fifth season was actually approved, like, score! Okay. While I was, like, the beginning few episodes were intriguing. I especially love Views from the Gallery. It started to get weird with the telepath thing. I didn't think they nailed it. Exactly, even though they had a bigger budget, not by much.
It really felt like almost a pacing issue, and plus what we were talking about earlier with without having Claudia Christians on the show anymore. That kind of hurt that plot a lot.
Agreed. But like you said, as we've worked towards the, again, homages to other intellectual property, especially Tolkien, the primary baddie is gone, but the remnants remain. So the shadows are gone and the remnants remain, the Drak and whatnot. And as we build towards the eventual hijacking of the Centauri, which would lead to eventually the whole thing with David, which happens off screen, and probably for the best, it gives us a lot to think about. And yeah, that lead up to the conflict with Centauri Prime and the dichotomy, the role reversal, the Narn are getting revenge and bombing their world now. That was pretty spectacular and tragic and pretty cool. And I love that kind of, that coming full circle with Jakar and Londo, how they have learned to respect each other and care for each other, and they part in tears. And eventually their ultimate fate is to kill one another, but also to save themselves, which is the exact opposite of what they thought. It was like, they are dying people. We should let them pass. So they save themselves at the end by basically sacrificing themselves. And everybody leaving exactly as they came onto the show, often in the same costume. I thought that was really a nice touch.
And like, I didn't notice that the same costumes that I'll have to go back. Rewatched them though. Yeah, I'll have to go back again.
And Sheridan's last speech, his message to his son, is really powerful stuff. I listened to it not long before we came on here, and I was getting all choked up, especially we lose friends, remember them, enjoy them for who they are, and remember them for who they were. I'm like, oh my God, killing me.
He didn't say, always keep a nuke nearby, though, which, I mean, let's be honest, that should have been in there. Like,
I will say that in retrospect, one of my favorite moments of season five was when, I don't know who it was, the Narn commander was talking to Sheridan right before they were attacking Centauri Prime.
That is War Leader Nikal.
Yes. And he was saying to Sheridan, like, we're going to do this in a way, and you're not going to do anything about it. Because we've given you plausible denial that we're doing it, and it's what you taught us how to conduct warfare and politics with each other. I thought it was a really good subtle moment, because throughout the entire season 3 and 4, especially, Sheridan was showing a way to conduct war that was very sneaky in different ways, but also he wanted to the only way to fight a fascist regime, which what he was doing, is to get the people on your side. And it showed what a story that is told, given all this time to tell its story, does well with the character. And his through his character and his action, he guided people and led through showing. But in this moment at the end, it shows the yin and yang, whoops, the other side of that. Whoops,
the yin and yang, exactly.
I accidentally showed you tactics that could be directly used against me by my own people in a way that's not, oh, we got it, we're like a big moment, but it's like an, oh, shit, I did that too type of moment. And those little subtle things.
Remove any kind of moral high ground you might have to stop them.
Yeah, and those subtle things are what JMS did really well with the show, and even in season 5 could still pull out tricks like that.
Yeah, agreed.
Mike, so clearly I am without a script. I don't know where to go. There's nothing else going on, right?
I think we're done with the first part of the show, so I think it's time to go on to the quiz. And now we don't have an episode to have a quiz on. So today's quiz instead is going to be on the history of our show. You got to check this out in our coverage of Babylon 5.
Oh, no. So, Dre, I'm doomed. I'm doomed.
So this is Dre versus Carl to see who knows more about the show that Dre is a host of. And there's only 4 questions now because, hey, it was Babylon 5, 5 questions, but the decommission and blow exploded Babylon 5. So 4 questions here on our show. Are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, but as usual, you've both done this before. Please buzz in with your name as soon as you have an answer. Question 1. The category is permanent waves. Who objectively has the best hair on Babylon 5?
Dre Alvarez. I don't know why I said my last name, Marcus.
Yes, he swept season three.
Yep, go check out MikeSlater.com. Mike grades hair for all of season 3, and Marcus wins every episode.
Byron has some really fabulous hair, too, but yeah, Marcus wins.
I'm giving Byron nothing. Nothing, Carl.
This show, if nothing else, was going to give Marcus a run for his money on that. But despite those luscious locks and that beautiful English perm he had going on, we had the whole Centauri race with that measured by hair. We had Lieutenant Haircut, who's just a chip block of a hair the whole time.
That fits so much more for it. This keeps making so much more sense for Ivanova would have done so well. Got a thing for the crazy hair. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Question the second. We're going right to nerd numbers.
I always miss
question
these.
Is how many guests actually appeared on the Blitzcast?
So I can't objectively answer this because I don't know it, and I have a spreadsheet in front of me, and I can't imagine Carl would know.
I do not.
But there was, so we'll go right to the multiple choice, if that'll
okay,
help.
Okay.
Is it 10 guests, 11 guests, 12 guests, 14 guests, or 15?
Carl, 15.
No.
Oh.
Dre, you get a chance for this one.
Did we get 12? I thought we got 12. We lost one, but then we also had a couple surprises. So I'm going to go guess 12.
12 is correct. Dre, so far you're 2 for 2. You do know your own show. So we're going to have our first bonus question of the quiz in the nerd numbers category. This is actually a whole new format for our quiz, Dre. This is a teamwork is sharing work question. So I'm going to give a question, and Dre, you're going to give an answer. And then, Carl, you're going to tell me if Dre is correct or if he's too high or too low on the numbers. So these are still nerd numbers. So, Dre, in season 2, I gave Sheridan a score each episode based on how much he acted either like William Shatner in the original Star Trek series or Picard in The Next Generation.
I remember this.
How many points did Sheridan get for each of these categories, Dre?
Wow, this is rough.
And what's the range, 0 to 10 or 0 to 5?
It was usually 0 to 3 for each episode, a couple times.
And are you talking the net? Because I think he barely stayed Shatner, which I did have some disagreements. I think I should get some bonus points remembering that you did give him some data points, like Data, the robot, one episode. That was something like 24 to 22 Shatner to Picard.
All right, so let's do them one at a time. What is his score for Shatner?
I'm going to say 24 Shatner.
All right, Carl, is that right on, too high, or too low?
Oh, well, it's about how many episodes, because I would say it might be sometimes a score of 2 per episode or 3. So I would say maybe a little low.
Dre, you had it on the money.
Oh,
he had exactly 24 as the final Shatner score.
Holy shit. Good job.
I don't care about the rest. That's enough. Getting one of those right is
that's great.
Record. It's right on. You weren't looking this up too?
This was my worst. I did not look it up. This is my worst quiz category for across. I love the fact that Mike made a category named after me that I have fallen on my face multiple episodes on when I have participated.
All right, so we'll go to the second part of this question. Picard, what was Sheridan's final Picard score for season two?
I might hate myself for this. I thought it was -2, but I'm going to drop one. I'm going to say 21. For whatever reason, now that I remember the 24, I'm going to drop it down to 21.
Carl, what do you think? Is that right on the money, too high, or too low at 21 Picard points?
I'm trying to think what I might score him as. Jeez.
I will stress that Mike is wrong, but he was the judge.
That's just my general state of existence, though, is wrong, so I'm used to it.
I'm going to err on the side of what has happened before, and I'll say that's on the money.
Oh, I'm sorry, but actually Picard won out with 29 points.
He got up to 29. Yep. Okay, never mind. Actually, I feel good here, because I'm wrong, but I'm double wrong, but I'm happy to be double wrong to say Mike saw the error of his ways, and because Picard was almost always leading.
It was just a couple of those episodes where he flew off about his wife and everything that we gave him a ton of extra shadow. But yeah, Picard was definitely in. He was up on Picard points the entire time.
Yeah.
And then the third category for emotion chip data, we'll give a third bonus question on the bonus. What do you think? How many emotion chip data points did he get?
Did you give him 3? Did you just give him 3 for the episode as a bonus?
I'll tell you, Carl, that's not on the money, but that's very close. Is that higher or lower?
Okay, and this is season 2. Okay. Oh, gosh. It's going to be, oh, my God. I think it's going to be like 4.
Oh my God, so close. It went right up. It was 5 points from 3 to 4 to 5.
This is where we get to question Mike the judge, because I missed, which is fine. But by the way, 1 out of 3, I am elated with trying to guess on the money. Carl guessed higher than 3. So I took that as a higher.
Technically, I was right.
We both got 1 out of 3. 1 out of 3. So we tie on this question.
My O was like, oh, you almost got another one on the money.
Oh, you could have gotten a bonus point, Carl.
Dude, I have so many stickers over here. None of the guests have actually turned in their points for stickers. I'm just like, I'm loaded in stickers. Carl, you just let me know.
I'll want some stickers.
Yeah, we'll see how many points you have at the end, but you might be getting some stickers coming your way. All right. This is actually only the third category we're on. The category is, I think I'm a clone now. What episode birthed an evil AI clone of Mike?
Of Mike?
You can either say the episode we covered or the guest on that episode. Here are the 4 multiple choices. Was it The Geometry of Shadows with Jaina Mistry? Was it the Buffy and the Shatner Picard Index minisode? Was it Chrysalis with Evan Stitely? Or was it the Only Use for Hats minisode with Taylor?
Carl, I want to give you a chance to guess here, but it's hard. I'm pretty sure I know the answer.
I'm going to say Geometry of Shadows.
You got it right. Carl is on the board.
I might have gotten it wrong, because the mini episode for that was the Buffy. So Carl, I would have gotten it wrong. But yeah, that was a fantastic episode with Jaina Mistry. Excellent side thing. That was a fun one. That was with the techno mages.
Oh, great. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Last category. Yes. All My Friends Are Londos, including minisodes and blitzcasts. What guest has been on the most episodes of You Gotta Check This Out? And how many episodes?
Carl, I would say me, and that would be 3.
Oh my gosh, you are extremely close. I'll explain in just a moment. Dre, do you have an answer to buzz in?
Who are you? Okay, this gets obnoxious, Mike.
Which part of that answer wasn't correct?
Are you counting? This is effing meta, you insane man. I'm tempted to use my answer from the last one. Are you counting the mini episode of the Blitzcast, the bonus of that?
Yes.
Okay.
What?
Dre, okay. Carl, I believe you're correct, but if I am right, isn't it a tie? Carl is 4, and then wouldn't my brother... Wouldn't my brother Daniel be 4 as well, because he was on twice, right?
Yeah, all right. We're both very close, but I'm going to give you the actual answer. You were dancing around it earlier. It's Karen. Karen has been on 5 episodes. So the bonus question is,
bastard,
Dre, here is
bastard.
Your chance. Here is your chance for redeeming. What five episodes was Karen on?
You can go to hell, Mr. Ratsoff. You can go to hell.
Because this has to do with Ratsoff, doesn't it?
Because Karen did her episode, the mini episode as well, the Blitzcast, the bonus Blitzcast, and then with Pete Johnston, where you just, they're both saying Ratsoff. I'm like, guys, I've lost my mind watching Babylon 5 season
like,
5.
Ratsoff to you.
Karen came in randomly during filming, said Ratsoff to everybody. I went, I don't know what's going on, but let's keep going. And Mike included that in the bonus episode. You
That's awesome.
Bastard.
I definitely, one of my favorite moments on the entire show when Karen came in and broke Dre's reality. Dre thought that we were just messing with him the whole time and made it up. And then she came in and validated everything.
That's amazing.
Unprompted.
Good
so,
girl.
Karen's the only one in the Five Timers Club. As of right now, this moment, Carl is in the 4.5 timers club, because as soon as he finishes this episode, this is going to be Carl's 5th appearance, and Carl will surpass Karen when the minisode for this comes out.
Oh, so my goodness.
That's why this is an interesting question. So I will say my last bonus question for the 8th question of my 4-question quiz is, can you name all of the members of the You Gotta Check This Out 4 Timers Club? Carl is one of them at 4.5. Who are the other three people who have been
You're doing a bonus.
Times?
I already did one, Daniel.
Yes, Dan is one of them. So this is basically the other two people who were on both the Blitzcast and the Blitzcast bonus episode.
Oh, that's interesting, right? That's hard to parse. Because, yeah, it all blends together because we did it all as one.
All right, I'm going to give it up to you. That's the end. It's Megan Bushhausen and Logan Trent. And Moses, I just want to start establishing that we're going to have to think of what to do for people when they hit this 10 timers club. Are we going to send out jackets, or what are we going to do?
What are, by the way, Mike, how are you counting the people who we used as intro voices on season 4 and 5 who have not been on?
Ooh, that's a great question.
I'm not counting them because we're paying them separately for that.
I think you just
stickers!
Didn't, I think you didn't
stickers!
Think of it, but that's okay. Yeah. Mike. I gotta, that as an amazing quiz master this entire time,
yeah.
You outdid yourself for that. So
excellent. I wanted impressed. To go out with a good quiz on the show itself for a while, a little bit meta there.
All right. So Mike, amazing quiz. You had one other fun idea that you have on the script that I have copious notes written about that I am excited about.
Oh, are you excited to go into the main? Yeah, we don't have a main topic here because the main topic is just us reminiscing about the show in general. So I thought that while we have Carl on, let's take a few moments, more than a few moments.
Me, Mike, it's going to be way more than a few moments.
I know. I said that and I immediately said, no, this is going to be way more than a few moments knowing us. But let's take a few times to talk about our favorite moments of the show. Something I'd like to call the Bab Fiveies. Before coming into this episode for the last month, I asked you guys to pick one of each of your favorite things. Your favorite character from all of Babylon 5, your favorite episode from all of Babylon 5, and your favorite Babylon 5 moment. And we're going to take each of those categories and go in a circle and kind of name our favorites and push for why we think that is the best character, why that is the best episode, and why that is the best moment. So because guests should come first, Carl, we're going to let you go first on each of them. There's no rules on if we can have duplicates or not, but we may pivot halfway through if somebody else picks the same character episode. It's all up to us. But
all
yeah,
right.
Carl, if you come prepared, let's have you a drum roll. And what is your favorite character in all of Babylon 5?
That would be Jakar.
Thanks. I literally, in my notes, had Carl. Jakar is the obvious winner. If someone doesn't say him, you are incorrect. So awesome. Great work. Yes.
All right. We'll give you the floor, Carl. Tell us a little bit about Jakar. Like, why is he the best embodiment of all of Babylon 5 in a character?
He is the full circle as prime example. So he goes from being a bad guy, melodramatic, over the top, to a tragic hero, to priest. And he's also so eloquent. He's such a spectacular actor when they let him do his soliloquies and his speeches, and just the transformation of his character and his ability to act and his ability to work with the prosthetics and his costumes. He makes it feel like his own flesh. It's just, he's amazing. He's amazing. And obviously that part of his Magic is the foil, which is Londo. They're almost kind of like a dual character in some ways. But yeah, that's why I love Jakar. He has a full transformation and recovery. So he goes from bad guy to good guy.
I never saw him as a bad guy, even at the beginning. I know they were trying to like kind of position him as more stern, more like he's the alien. He's the most alien looking member of the main cast, for sure. But I never saw him. I saw him as more like a little bit aloof and stern. And just as soon as you found out like what was going on between his race and all the Centauri, like I immediately had a lot of sympathy for him even before that was brought into his character.
Mike, I gotta be the pedant nerd here. The pilot episode, he literally tries to assassinate Kosh. Yeah. And the first episode, he literally takes Londo's nephew hostage and has him lie to a camera as he's being held hostage and they're bombing it. Admittedly, we get justification, but he was...
See how good they did? I completely forgot about all those little details. It's been so long.
To conquer the galaxy.
Yeah, but by now, all my biggest memories of Jakar are from like the last few seasons where they really softened him up, especially all of the torture scenes and everything towards the beginning of, what is it, the third season when he was captured by the Emperor and like really starting to bond with Londo more. That's really like where... I remember everything for him. It's such a huge character turn.
I will definitely give you a chance, Mike, to be wrong and not say Jakar was the best, but I'd also love to hear anything else. I did just have a couple of like runner-up, but just the way I phrased them. I said Londo was my favorite who I should hate, but that's just how good the actor is. Londo is terrible. The fact that I made it through the show, he is awful. He is terrible. I hate him. Peter Jurisic is just so amazing. He's hard. I said Vera is the character I identify with the most, right? The buffoon. We're all nerds here, right? He's the buffoon that has like a weird self-confidence. So he's like clumsy, but he believes in himself. He keeps going forward. He grows into his own. I think it's a very nerd tale that I did. Corwin was my favorite, like, secret discovery thing. It's a weird category, Mike. Corwin was my favorite secret discovery character, thanks to Mike Slater. Because he had an awesome
Abercrombie moments.
Abercrombie is my favorite random nickname. And like, this was this back down character that I remembered that it wasn't until I watched this show with Mike to just realize the number of times I'm like, he's just wearing clothes from the Gap. Well, he's like leading everybody off to war. And I'm like, and he's like getting his hair done. I'm like, what is this? It's like, they got a guy from Target to come in. And I'm like, you're not dressing up. And I'm like, fair enough. And then finally, just Garibaldi as the love the character, of course, but just the most random comparison nicknames. It was already well known he was Bruce Willis, but Mike and Karen listed him as Dan Aykroyd in the front, Seth MacFarlane in the back. And then in the last episode, we got Billy Joel. So Bruce Willis, Dan Aykroyd, Seth MacFarlane, Billy Joel, Garibaldi. Those were my runner-up kind of fun categories I put together.
If I had a runner-up, it would be Ivanova.
Oh, great. Oh, and by the way, Carl, you're picking number one and two in the draft, like you
might go that way.
Good job. You passed the CAPTCHA on having watched this.
Cool. No, I didn't go that far to do a huge line of runner-ups. My favorite is 100% Ivanova. Throughout the, I loved her character, and I think a big reason we've already talked about, like season five, it was so empty without her, especially after she really came into her own. We get the best character development on the show with Susan. Throughout the first whole couple seasons, she had a certain kind of aloof and self-seriousness to her, but the acting brought it through more. She always she always showed, even in the later seasons, her self-doubt of what she was doing, her self-doubt of like, she was always astonished that she was the leader, but it's like she looked around and the type of person she was that it had to take charge at a very earlier age. You really see her being forced into this position going up and just going with it because that's the strength of her character. Sleeping in through the alarm, leading the Drazi in the purple and green, like she's constantly relegated these B-plot straight man things throughout the first few seasons. But we saw her rise in rank and influence, and she always had an assertion to her against the crew. And I think it all came together later on, like when I forget who she was telling this, but it was early on when she said, "I'd like you to take the time to learn the Babylon 5 mantra. Ivanova is always right. I will listen to Ivanova. I will not ignore Ivanova's recommendations. Ivanova is God, and if this ever happens again, Ivanova will personally rip your lungs out."
Wasn't that someone like docking incorrectly? And
yeah,
like
it was a small thing that she said, but it was perfectly about her character. Yeah.
No boom today. Boom tomorrow. There's always a boom tomorrow.
Yeah, and when they like Lockley came in later on and was really, they were trying to replace her with it.
Oh, they were trying way too hard at that.
She just did not have, it just felt like an undercooked Ivanova. Compare her telepathic mom past. We slowly figured out more and more throughout the first three seasons about her past, with her mom committing suicide, the whole that having to take the telepathic drugs. Compare that moment, which could be so melodramatic, with the scene in season 5 where Lockley and Garibaldi had their after school drinking special dramas. "I did it because of you. No, I'm a drinker too." It's comparing just what those arcs could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ivanova, chef's kiss, was such a good character.
Very well said, Mike. Very well said.
Thank you.
That moment made a fantastic moment on the show with Pete Johnston, which is one of my favorite "You Gotta Check This Out" moments. Hannah Michaels did not make a funny joke about Ivanova's sad backstory, so you could maybe give a point to Lockley there. And I'm gonna have to give you, I love the point, Mike, that you brought up, like the addition by subtraction proof, like the lack of Ivanova in season 5 kind of showing through, and like us getting excited as you and Carla both explained, oh, here's a plot that could have worked. And it actually is giving me a lot more sympathy to JMS for season 5, because I've been like, it's almost like he had, when we're talking back doors, like too many engines went out. He could have handled, he could have handled TNT's notes and a new network and having burned all of his material, but he couldn't handle that and losing Ivanova, who was like the most logical next step. And I think, by the way, the answer, if I'm doing my math correctly, Mike, with how everything came out, is Jakar and Ivanova tie on this one, which I am content with.
I also just throw it in, her last line, or almost the very last line, "There can always be new beginnings, even for people like us."
Yeah.
Oh.
I wouldn't say it's a tie. I would have to go to Ivanova all the way. There's a reason they brought her back and gave her the
tie,
last
Mike.
Line.
I am not letting you overturn.
She's the last one to speak. There's a reason.
Jakar got 2 number one votes. Ivanova got 1 number one and number two, and I'm trying to get tie, and Mike's overreaching.
I'm willing to concede. I can concede Ivanova.
I swear to God,
Ivanova is just that good.
I swear to God, Mike.
But Ivanova's concession. The only one. She's the only one.
Jakar was robbed, is what I'm saying.
Ivanova is God. Cool. All right, then we should move on to the best episode category here. Carl, do you want to reveal your best episode of the series?
I have talked about it in a previous podcast, The Long Twilight Struggle, where the Narn main fleet is eviscerated and Narn is laid bare and they're nuked from orbit. And it's this moment in the series where shit just goes sideways. And it's a moment where that blew my mind when I first saw it, because I was operating under kind of Star Trek paradigm of thinking, oh, it'll get resolved somehow. It must be. And then they didn't resolve it, and they ended it in the worst catastrophe possible. And they eliminate a whole superpower, and they cast somebody from the ruling government down into the dirt. And it was so shocking, more so than Coming of Shadows. For me, that's where Babylon 5 achieves supremacy over all the other sci-fi shows that were out there. It is such a poignant, the building up of the dread. And then when the fleet goes to battle with the shadows, and Jakar desperately praying, and you're like, maybe they'll get away. Nope, the whole armada is annihilated. And then the next scene is the Centauri nuking Narn from orbit, and you just have Londo seeing what he's done, and as the freaking mass driver asteroids are flying past and killing billions of people, and the shadow slowly going over his face, and then that final confrontation in the council chamber where the Narn regime walks off the galactic stage and Jakar gives his spectacular speech. And then the revelation of the Rangers, and that there's an army of light forming because the evil powers are winning at home out in the galactic stage. And obviously you have the Great Machine. So it has everything. And so I think The Long Twilight Struggle is the best episode for me.
Mike, who lobbied for Ivanova and has definitely done Ivanova readings, as the Jakar fan, I got to make sure I do the same. Because, yeah, the speech at the end of that, which I've seen quoted everywhere, oddly prescient for modern days,
yes,
by Jakar, where he says, "No dictator, no invader can hold an imprisoned population by force of arms forever. There is no greater power in the universe than the need for freedom. Against that power, governments and tyrants and armies cannot stand. The Centauri learned this lesson once. We will teach it to them again. Though it may take 1,000 years, we will be free." And yeah, that was...
Good job, Dre.
That episode, that mic drop. Yeah. Okay, so Mike, I'll let you go. But Jakar needed his due. Robbed Jakar of best.
I was going to talk about the episode itself. What I like about this choice is it really shows the way that JMS both could pay off things in the middle of a long series, like you're saying, that actually... following through on the attack on the Narn planet, showing all the shadows come in, showing the Rangers for the first time, like really truly revealing themselves. It was both a culmination and a showing of what's to come. And it's some of the best moments you can have as a longtime viewer is reliving some of those. So, yeah, I like that pick.
Thank you.
So my episode pick might surprise everybody. I picked The Geometry of Shadows from season 2, episode 3.
I'm intrigued.
This is the episode that I think after doing this whole podcast, which is about introducing people, I think I would pinpoint that episode as the episode to show somebody as, hey, I have a show that I want you to get into. It's like you have to know the story as you go along, but I know one episode that it has a lot that's going on, or if you like Star Trek or some other just random drop-in episodes, here's one that'll show you a little bit of the lore and a little bit of the world building of our show that's already been going, but is a nice kind of like slice of life for what happens. You get the purple and green Drazi War gave us so much in this episode, because we see Ivanova again, comes back to the best character, Ivanova. She's getting promoted a little bit, but she's also showing that you're just going to do a little bit of my dirty work here. And we get to see how Ivanova rises to the situation. Even if you know the behind the scenes from that episode where she had her leg broken on the filming of the Drazi. Yep. And still went on to do it, and how she pulled that into her performance. It's just that whole Star Trek-ish thing, I think, is a good way to sink people's teeth into the iconography of, oh, here's this weird alien race, purple green. It's about humans on a deep space 9-ish space station having to solve problems, which isn't really what the whole series is about. But that's a better hook to get people in. And on the other B plots, you get Londo and Veer dealing with the techno mages with that crazy CGI. It's a very good way to tell if people are going to immediately bounce off the series because of old CGI, or if it's going to draw them in more so than season 1, where they were still figuring things out and it really looked slapdash in places. This is what you're getting, not just the CGI space, but you're going to get some CGI monsters too. Are you going to deal with it? So I think this is when going back and watching a few episodes, this was my favorite one. Oh yeah. First appearance of Lord Rafa. Come on.
Lord Rafa.
I really got to give respect to your point there, Mike.
I never thought of it that way. That's a great point.
Mike, I'm going to give you some credit. Rory Sutherland is a great marketing guy. And he has said, a funny thing is when you're selling a house, realtors want to just say the good things, right? Spacious bedroom. And he's, you know what you should do? Say the bad things about the house, because then the people realize if that's a deal breaker. So if you say, hey, this house is right next to a crowded bar that has musicians all the time, Mike Slater might say, like, oh, a place for me to get a gig.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, versus other people might say no. And so Bab, I love that point, because it's like, you might want to try and hide some of the hokey, weird alien plots, like Ivanova trying to have sex with a guy who is like a eugenicist. That happened, people. And like some
lady of the purple nightgown.
Yeah, sometimes the CGI is hit or miss. And then I think the Technomages did a really good job, because there were like 3 levels with the Technomage, right? There was the him pulling an orange blossom, and you're like, that was an incredibly simple effect and worked really well. Nerds like me are like, why didn't you do that the whole episode? There is the Technomage realizing he's being recorded and doing the Lita Alexander blow up the camera, which is okay, that's reasonable, right? And then there is the like gremlins and big monster that look horrible, and you're like, what is this? But you're right. Like, if someone makes it through that episode, and we had Jaina Mistry on for that, that is great, Mike. I love it.
And it also has the hinting of the larger arc with the coming darkness and whatnot.
Yep. So you get a little bit of that. That's the Technomages are leaving because of that. So they tend, but they don't go too far into that. You don't need any of the surrounding larger story to enjoy that episode for what it is.
I think that's actually quite brilliant, because I've tried introducing people to Babylon 5 by showing them, and now for a word, because it's like exposition central. But yeah, it might be too much exposition, even though I do love that stuff. That's really cool, Mike. I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah. All right, Dre, let's hear your favorite episode.
Let's just throw the fastball that's correct, right? War Without an End, a fantastic episode of You Gotta Check This Out, one of the most amazing, and I get to give all sorts of caveats. Mike, you and I both, as writers and editors, have to respect the amount of on-the-fly making a story work when literally four legs were knocked out. So War Without an End was mind-blowing. We did the first Super Size X-Men episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Carl Wolf with War Without an End. So what I would really say is absolutely go check out those episodes, because there's a reason I'm giving it my vote. And we spent 2 hours recording just how great it was. And the other easy point is it is a spoiler heavy episode. So the reason it works so well is it ties up a lot of plots and reveals a lot of things. And I think every Babylon 5 fan has that moment of, I don't want to spoil War Without an End. I want to see anybody, when they see that moment, to be like, what the fuck? And if you get that organically, you're like, what the hell? So I would say absolutely go listen to that episode. And yeah, Mike, that's my easy cop out, to be like, I don't want to talk too much about it, because it does have so many layers that are spoiler heavy. And go watch it.
You know, we can talk about it without being spoiler, because no one listening to this should have not heard Babylon 5, especially that episode. But that episode shows just the juggling act that JMS had to pull off. You can watch it and have this, that it's a pretty mind-blowing, bendy science fiction episode in and of itself. But just, it's the type of episode that really rewards research. After watching it, after watching everything around it, researching what happened to the captain, research like why he had to tell the story that way. It's one of the few things in television that really pays off like that. And the type of show like this about it, it makes it that, though, that's the type of episode that makes a podcast like this able to go so in depth, because there's so much around it happening.
Yeah. And it was getting, and it's also, we mentioned, I think, what the trouble with Tribbles or something, a Deep Space Nine episode. We even talked to some Deep Space Nine fans that said that one felt just like fan service. And yep. What is fascinating is War Without an End was fan service, in that we got like the two captains we never thought we'd see together. We got to see them together, but it wasn't done in a way that you're like, oh, isn't that awesome? Is it Sisko gets to meet Captain Kirk? Isn't that amazing? It was like, no, they worked together. And like I said, the extra reason I'm giving it, where Mike is saying it rewards the research, is after the fact, you realize it's very Andre the Giant in WrestleMania 3. He is limited. He's injured. He cannot do what he did when he was younger. That is Captain Sinclair. At the time, it did not stand out as much. And after the fact, going like, oh, he couldn't use this guy near as much as he should have in that episode, but somehow managed to still use him, still give him his flowers, still not have the fans suspect it, was just masterclass.
Yeah, if you compare War Without End to like In the Beginning movie, how they use Sinclair, where Eric Sinclair, by that time, he was only able to be, despite the pivotal role he had in that, only appeared in the last couple minutes.
Yeah, body double in a flashback, which was, that's a bummer. Yeah. And then, by the way, just Mike, I've done this a few times, I got to do again. Blitzcast is my favorite episode, however you want to count it.
Yeah.
Blitzcast, for You Gotta Check This Out, was ridiculous. And that was my absolute favorite, Mike. So that's my meta category. My favorite episode of You Gotta Check This Out is the Blitzcast.
I like that because it shows we could expand the show as a podcast to go beyond what we're just talking about, to do some truly goofy shit at the same time. Cool. All right. That's the first two categories. Let's go on to the last category, the Bab Fiveys here. Carl, what is your favorite Babylon 5 moment from any episode of the series?
I, having just rewatched Sleeping in Light, I have to say my favorite moment, the most poignant, is the scene when they're all leaving the station for the final time, and JMS has a cameo, literally turning the lights off. And you think it's so empty and melancholy, and you're like, it's been forgotten. Oh my God. And then you have these kind of mythical moments happening. So like the foreshadowed destruction of the station with the last shuttle leaving, and then you have the last shuttle leaving and the red eye going out. And lo and behold, you have a huge fleet of from the whole galaxy. They didn't forget. They're here to honor this glorious thing. And then the music just goes, reaches this crescendo and climax, and it's just huge, glorious, weepy moment. I think that's the culmination of it for me.
Wow, it sounds like it hits you in the same way that Guardians 2 actually hits me at the end when all of the Ravagers come back to celebrate Yondu's funeral in space.
I'm glad Carl's giving Christopher Frank some due, because I love the music and I've brought it up a few times and I know it doesn't hit as high. Okay, I'll jump in, Mike, with mine. I will say this, Carl, congratulations, because you swayed the voting again. I did have the nuke drop in Zaha Doom. That seemed like just such an obvious straight-up, but I crossed it out. I crossed it out for when Jakar and Londo reconcile. That is actually one of my favorite episodes. That was a great episode. You got to check this out, because it was a silly season five. We have the Muppet doing Blue's Clues with the thing. But in the midst of all that, there is an incredibly poignant scene with Londo and Jakar. And I argue that was needed. That should have been in season four. We absolutely needed that scene of the two of them reconciling and Jakar basically saying it correctly. I may never be able to forgive your people, but I can forgive you. Londo realizing what he's gone through. Londo give it the whole, you're going to have to give into your greatest fear thing, I feel was yo-yoed because of the four ending and coming back. Those, I remember a prophet told Londo that was like his last thing. So that episode, we actually had it done and shown in a way that I thought was effective. So when we were talking to Londo Jakar, I remember that and went just absolute that replaced the moment over even the nuke drop. And then I did just basically my other one from kind of fans, Mike, because on the show we had some great fan moments. Mm-hmm. Jakar dripping on dust is one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Shown somebody.
All of it, Mallory. All of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the other one is in the Grey Council when they all storm off. We had, that was a hilarious moment. And then Michael Vincent Bramley had a great fan theory that hopefully I'll reveal. Either listen to the episode of Michael Vincent Bramley or I'll reveal. I love that moment because it's hokey of the moment. And as you're watching it, you're kind of like, this is hokey. And then Michael Vincent Bramley inadvertently saved it with a fan theory that I love.
The one about bringing out the paddles.
Yeah, that too. That's part of the theory, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
If I can throw in real quick, a second favorite of mine runner-up would be Zaha Doom, when Sheridan is on the balcony over the Dark City and Anna reaches out her hand and the music again is so important, swells. And then, yes, the nuke drops. That is, in a lot of ways, like the climax of the show.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I guess if you guys are set, I'll go. And a little dramatic acting for this one. Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, commander, daughter of Andre and Sophie Ivanova. I am the right hand of vengeance and the boot that is gonna kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth, sweetheart. I am death incarnate and the last living thing that you are ever going to see. God sent me. This moment just still sends me through chills, just seeing the transformation, the full character arc that she goes through that we talked about. This is what realized that she is the best character on the series. She's commanding the White Star Fleet. This is the end of season four, between the darkness and the light. She's confronted by the Earth Force destroyers, revealing that they have been outfitted by shadow technology, showing what they've been doing in the background the whole time. This is Earth's endgame after colluding with the shadows. The Force commands her to surrender before that speech, and it's just so powerful, and it's like a button on everything that's come before without even being the full climax of the story or the series. It just shows how powerful a moment brought together by correctly written, by it comes from everything before that and acted in such a way that makes it unforgettable, makes it the most powerful moment of Babylon 5 for me.
Mike, I love how you put this into context with her greater character arc, and I love it. I can see it. It's great.
Yeah, those are the things that hit me really well. And I think I didn't have any runner-ups for best moment. I didn't even think about it after that. But I did almost come in with Franklin as my best character. And the reason is because walkabouts are very important and you have to remember to take care of yourself, as Franklin eventually does. So I have to give a shout out to Franklin and the walkabout.
Can we stay there? I know we talked this on the show, Mike, but Carl, to get you roped in, I bashed the hell out of walkabout so much, but then he paid it off because it was such a pretentious, annoying, your stupid friend has discovered keto or something. And the end of it literally is Franklin himself going, what the fuck are you doing? Stop it. And it's rough because it was a growing moment, right? When Franklin goes back, that's his start of his character, is he would not do things that he couldn't do in war and would run away instead. And the end is realizing, hey, I got 30 telepaths and I don't want to sacrifice them. But if I say, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. So I was shocked that walkabout, I argue, paid off, because I was like, this is, what are you doing, JMS? This is so annoying. And then he ended it.
If like, anybody's going to pay off walkabout, we know it's going to be JMS, who is obsessed with walkabout throughout his stuff. The one other thing I noticed about Franklin, I'll get that out here, is that remember how we talked about spinoff showcase throughout season five? How they're like, you get a spinoff, you get a spinoff. They're sending everybody off of their series. The one they should have done, which they could have done, but it's way too late now, is the prequel. I want to see Franklin's adventures as a hitchhiker on ships, as a freelance xenobiologist in space. Because he says in the one episode where his dad comes back, that's what he said he did before Babylon 5. He was just going to ship, and I want to see him in a Bill Bixby, like a Hulk-like series, going out in Babylon 5 universe, space to space. Each week, he's at a different place solving a crisis with his xenobiology.
Mike, this is even genius, too, because of the relationship with his dad. You can also even get the other, you can get the Dilgar War and see what Earth and Caesar's ascension. Yeah. And you can
they
literally
had it
have
right
the
on the table. They just had to just pick it up and those scraps, like they just left Franklin alone.
You could literally have, rest in peace now, you could have had Richard Biggs play his dad. So you could have gotten a new young actor to play young Franklin. You could have had Richard Biggs playing his dad as the general. Damn it, Mike. Yeah.
It's honest, it could have been. It's a coulda, shoulda, woulda, but I just had that thought and I had to share it.
Between the two of you, you're like, we could have had season five with Ivanova, we could have had the prequel with Franklin, and I just get to go angry. Mike, do you want to do, in honor of the winner, I would say, of the Bab Fiveys, because I think the other categories, we have a lot of ties and lots of stuff, but in honor of Ivanova, the winner of the Bab Fiveys, do you want to, this is the end of the first You Gotta Check This Out segment on Babylon 5. This is it. Does Mike have a poignant end to this?
I don't know if there's any poignancy to be gained. This is our 52nd episode, which means we've officially been releasing these for a year as soon as this comes out. So I don't know if I've learned anything or want to go back over time, but I know that I'm excited to continue the show with you, Dre, and looking forward to the next couple seasons that we already have planned out.
Give me 1 second to try and do a Weird Al thing. Babylon 5 was the first of the You Gotta Check This Out seasons. There will definitely be another. It changed the future and it changed us. It taught us that we have to create our own fan theories and hang out with our friends. It showed us that we have to care for one another, because if we don't, who will? And that true strength sometimes comes from the most unlikely places. Mostly, though, I think it gave us hope. It gave us hope that all of our nerdy friends can enjoy things, that they have things to check out, and that we will have things to say about them.
I guess, speaking of this, we should still do our normal segment and ask Carl if there's anything our listeners should check out.
Oh, I think my list I gave before is pretty comprehensive. So The Expanse, of course, really took up the mantle of Babylon 5, I believe. The Outer Wilds video game, it's incredibly poignant, terrific music. Can't really talk about it because part of the experience is doing it yourself or watching it if you don't have time to play. Like, oh, can I give some two real plugs? My choir, Vanguard Voices, if you're in the Metro Detroit area, come check us out. And I'd like to give a plug out for my employer, Samaritas. We do a lot of important work helping refugees and fighting against the darkness and the Clark regime. And in addition to helping foster kids and the elderly and the poor. So Samaritas, we accept donations.
Hell yeah. I'll give my plug to the same thing I actually plugged last episode, because I actually had the show this past weekend. I'm in a new cover band around Chicago called Rock Lab. And we randomly sent our name in with 50 other bands, and we got the headlining slot on a huge festival that they're starting out in Chopin Park. So I got to play bass with some really great people. So my plug is go to Facebook to the Rock Lab page. Hopefully by the time this comes out, where there'll be some new videos of the show.
Mike from the future here. We did end up getting some video of the show, and it's on YouTube right now. I'll include a link in the description so you can check out the show, so please do if you can. All right, back to everybody else in the past. See ya.
So yeah, check out Rock Lab, and if you happen in the Chicago area and needed to book a large cover band for events, contact me.
That is awesome. Wonderful. But Mike, I first off, I do have to say, musician-wise, so before we started this, we did the Youngblood episode, and Mike did First Thought, Last Thought for that as a theme, as a custom theme song for an episode of Nerd on Rob Liefeld's Youngblood. And when I heard that, it was just genius. Like, when you wrote like a parody Saturday morning cartoon song for a cartoon that doesn't exist.
Oh, that was truly First Thought, Last Thought. That was like, took 2 hours from inception to sending it out to you. That was like, just put whatever I have out.
And that is definitely a punctuation on your resume of amazing musicianness. And then I get to cheat and use a Star Trekism, which I think Karen would appreciate. So Karen Slater was the first guest on You Gotta Check This Out. And Mike, she suggested checking out Dropout TV, the offshoot of College Humor that has some of the most hilarious stuff. And after months of being hammered by the Instagram algorithm, I finally subscribed and watched it and have been digging it. So, Mike, I find nothing more appropriate to end this season of You Gotta Check This Out with the first suggestion we had to check out from a guest was Dropout TV. I checked it out. And Mike, some of the projects they do are up there with you. You are a kindred spirit of the people up there with the amount of work they put into some of their plots for, say, Game Changers and other shows. So I will say that as well. Dropout TV, Game Changers is ridiculously good. And like I said, it is the bookend. It is the first thought that we recommended, and it is the last thought we recommended. Mike, thank you so much for seasons 1 through 5. You got to check this out.
And yeah, before we continue, if that's really about it, it's about time to announce the next season of the show. It's the last thing to do. So, woo-hoo! Dre, you picked out Babylon 5. Clearly, that was your choice, and we've done it for a year. And the last thing I want to do is spend another year diving so deep into one thing. So we're going to have a little bit of a palate cleanser season and do a mini season, almost taking a trick from your other show, Nerd, that does things in threes. We have 3 episodes on a comic property. We're going to be doing a 3-episode season on The Power Fantasy by Kieran Gillen. It's a comic book. Image has been putting it out for the past year. It wrapped up the first half. We are going to be doing an episode on each of the 3 volumes of collected editions. So the next episode of this podcast will not be on Babylon 5. It'll be on The Power Fantasy, Volume 1, Issues 1 to 5, with special guest Karen Slater again, of course, to start us out.
Because, Carl, you are not allowed to win. You are not allowed to win as the most guests, so I'm looking forward to this.
It's appropriate.
But yeah, there's one thing you said earlier, though. I'll make a bridge between The Power Fantasy and Babylon 5. Carl mentioned one of the best things about JMS is that he writes the ending and writes to that. And I'd suggest anybody can go out, check out Kieran Gillen's podcast. He does an occasional where he talks to other comic book creators, but he always talks about that. Like, the one thing you have to do if you want a successfully written series, a good story, is pick the ending and write to that. And with The Power Fantasy, he clearly did. I'm not going to get into any of it yet. We'll wait till next time to introduce everything. But for listeners, go ahead, treat yourself to The Power Fantasy, Volume 1, Issues 1 to 5. It's a really good series.
And the very last thing, Carl, any socials you would want plugged in particular?
Oh, nah. It's just me. I don't have a huge presence on social media, but check out my choir, Vanguard Voices. We do have a presence there, and we're trying to get some recordings up. And yeah. And as an aside, I just want to say I'm really impressed with you guys, and thank you for including me occasionally in your project. You guys have tremendous energy with each other, and I think it really works. And I'd love to participate again.
Sweet. We got to get you on 10 times to get that jacket.
Hell yeah.
Or some stickers. All right. Thanks, everybody, for checking out. You got to check this out. We cannot wait to see you next time. You can find Mike Slater most places on the internet as Slatron. That's S-L-A-T-R-O-N. Slatron11 on a few places. I'll let you figure that out. And if you haven't, please, please, please make sure you're checking out MikeSlater.com. Does he have supplementary material to all of our podcasts? Has amazing other projects, including music. We didn't even get into any of your cards, Mike, because we had so much else in the show. But Mike does altars of cards and has an altar to his altars of cards over at MikeSlater.com. And they are absolutely gorgeous. So please make sure you check that out. I'm Nerd Numbers most places on the internet, and you can come on Blue Sky and tell me and Mike we are both wrong. Thank you so much. Thanks for checking it out. We'll see you next checkout.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Cheers, all. You'll like the quiz then today, if that's what you're leading into it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You do have the quiz. And that is
there's a quiz. There's always a quiz.
There might not be. You never know, Mike. There might not be a quiz.
There
all
will
right.
always be a quiz.
There will always be a quiz. Let's make sure I'm going to keep that in some way or another.
Shut up. Fuck you. Always a quiz. Full stop.
Okay, you should pitch that to Dropout. Fuck you. Shut up. Always a quiz. That was
full.
I would watch that, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Shut good up. Title. Fuck you. Quiz time. Sit down.
Oh, shut up. Fuck you. Quiz time. That's good. Yeah. And then it could start with you saying, sit down. I'm Mike Slater. It's quiz.
Oh, you're distracting me with math.
Nice.